Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now, there's a new documentary in cinemas this weekend, officially sanctioned by the Bowie estate. It really is much less a documentary about David Bowie than an explosive, kaleidoscopic, immersive overview of the androgynous cyberspace alien messiah of rock, or something along those lines. It's a 2.25-hour cinematic odyssey exploring Bowie's creative, spiritual and musical journey. Brett Morgan made documentaries like The Kid Stays in the Picture about legendary film producer Robert Evans, and the authorised documentary on Kurt Cobain from 6 or 7 years ago called Montage of Heck. This time with very little biographical background, personal insight or any kind of album-by-album kind of approach, Morgan presents Bowie as some sort of space alien, an elliptical psychedelic art installation where he synthesizes experimental theatre, arena rock, avant-garde classical music, cutting-edge fashion and basically whatever you're having yourself. It's showing in cinemas now, so if you go see it, buckle up. It's a bumpy ride. So let's talk with the producer, writer and director of Moon Age Daydream, Brett Morgan. In a minute, that is. First off, here's the trailer. Moon Age Daydream.
Questions have arisen, such as who is he, what is he, where did he come from, is he a creature of a foreign power, is he a creep, is he dangerous, is he smart, dumb, nice to his parents, real, a put-on, crazy, sane, man, woman, robot, what is this?
Are you there, David? Are you there, Mr. David Bowie?
All people, no matter who they are, all wish they'd appreciated life more. It's what you do in life that's important, not how much time you have, or what you wish you'd done.
Brett, can I just take a look at what you've done here? This is, some people might think this is a kind of a straightforward autobiography of some sort. It most certainly is not. It's a wildly creative tribute. Is it fair to say that no matter how much you've done with this, you've let David Bowie be in charge of the narrative?
Well, I let him guide me, I think is a better way of sort of phrasing it. And by that, I mean, I employed just about every trick and method that David employed to create his art in a way to try to access him. And, you know, it's absolutely not a documentary in the way that we traditionally think of biographical documentaries. And if one goes there looking for kind of a cradle to grave narrative, I'll just be the first to tell you, you're not going to hear Lou Reed's name mentioned. You're not going to hear Iggy Pop's name mentioned. You're not going to hear any names, dates or times or anything like that. It's, because for me, Bowie is mysterious. He's enigmatic. He's sublime. He's intimate. And that is what I wanted, the experience I wanted to present to the viewer.
Okay, you've said all those things, and we all know he's a glam rock messiah, space alien, dance lizard, cyber guru, whatever. But you're celebrating David Bowie's legacy here as a live performer, a spiritual thinker, and everything in between. Can I say also, as a living work of art?
Yeah, well, I think that, as Bowie says himself, that he was a canvas that we would project onto. And I think one of the things that it was key for me in kind of understanding Bowie was understanding how deliberate and conscious he was in inviting us to project. The more I listen to David Bowie, the more I learn about myself. I don't know who David Jones is, per se, but when I listen to him, I feel like I'm sort of reflecting right back onto me. And you and I are going to have different interpretations of different songs because they're kind of written that way. He's inviting us to participate in his endeavor.
And Brett, like, you know, as you say, personal insights are few and far between in many ways, but the artistic and philosophical revelations, they are plentiful. When you were told that you had, what was it, 5 million pieces or something you got from the Bowie archive or the Bowie family, what's 5 million pieces? Like, what are they? What are these? Like, I saw plenty of things in this movie that I've never seen before, obviously, but what did you get?
Well, most of that is our concerts and concerts and like every show, particularly in the last 20 years when videotape was a thing, you know, every show was filmed and I looked at every frame of every moment. But we also had all of his journals, all of his diaries, all of his artwork, all of the clippings. I mean, all the photographs, it was just endless. And to expand upon that, we also created a database of anytime David did an interview and he made a cultural reference to some art that influenced or inspired him, we would also then go chase that down and bring it into the fold, so that the movie is a kind of amalgamation of both his own work and the work that inspired and influenced him throughout his life.
Okay, but not just the work, the people. I mean, is it more illuminating when you consider Bowie's place in the lineage of, if you like, flesh and blood, reality bending weirdos from Friedrich Nietzsche to Aleister Crowley, whatever? I mean, do you think Bowie belongs in the pantheon of these types, or is he even outside them?
No, I think Bowie, I think he'd be very comfortable in the company that you just suggested or recommended. I do think David was... In my opinion, he was the greatest artist of my lifetime. And by that, I mean, he seemed to be more in touch and more attuned to frequencies and transmissions than almost anyone that I could think of. And what makes him so unique to me in the world, the pantheon of entertainers or artists, is that he was willing to blow up his fame and his fortune nearly every time to satisfy his own intellectual curiosities. And I can't think of another popular artist who is willing to risk everything just to satisfy a creative niche.
Do you think he was a very shy man?
Not as I experience him, because I met him, and when I met him, he was definitely not shy. He was very present and very direct. And in viewing interviews with him, he was present. He was always present. So I never felt that he was retreating or elusive. I felt the opposite. I was like, his reputation was as someone who was like kind of hard to pin down. But in looking at everything, I didn't feel that the artist was hard to pin to assimilate. The person behind that, I think David was very careful to keep something for himself, you know, and I respected that, obviously, going into the film. I mean, I was never going to make a biography, but I don't think that would bring us any closer to an understanding of his art.
Okay, well, then let's forget about the shy bit and go from Major Tom to Ziggy Stardust to Tin White Duke to Aladdin Sane. This all allowed him, obviously, to hide his true self, supposedly. I think he was also hiding a certain kind of loneliness.
It's like writing about it. You know, that's like when Kurt Cobain died and people are like, he didn't kill himself. I'm like, did you listen to the lyrics? He's like been saying it out loud, but we all thought it was in like metaphor. That's the thing with David, right? I think that I viewed the alienation and isolation sort of metaphorically. And David, in fact, talks about it in the film. He's like, I don't feel lonely. I just, when I look, step back, I see why people think it's like that. But then at the same time, he's also saying that he can't allow love into his life. And he doesn't want a home, which is like the most basic sort of necessity that most of us feel we need. So he's complicated. He's very unique.
Okay, but just let's take this. You mentioned Kurt Cobain, and you made Montage of Heck, obviously. And one of the things you got about Kurt Cobain in that I put across was the essence of who he was. Is that, if I say that and you say, yeah, good, would you say the same thing about Moon Age Daydream and what you did there?
I hope so. But again, you know, when David's friends and associates have seen the film, they've, so far, every one of them that I've spoken to has said that the film achieves the impossible, and represents the man that they knew, that they worked with, that they were intimate with for their lifetime. So I a certain degree of luck, obviously, because I wasn't with David, so I was creating my own Bowie. But fortunately, it seems like I was picking up the right frequencies.
Okay, but also, like, you know, a lot of the things people might expect, the iconography of the album covers, we don't get that. No real Live Aid or Tin Machine, but not much of anything, bits of video, all that kind of thing. But all the things people might expect, especially the videos of the Black Star album, there's nothing there. You don't really do much of that at all.
You're coming at it, respectfully, yeah. You're approaching it like it's a different genre. You're like talking about like it's a horror film when it's a comedy. Like, it's not a biographical documentary.
Yeah, I know. I realize those, but Yeah, but one of the things you do here is you make sure that people understand where Terry comes in his life. Like, I didn't even realize Terry is 10 years older, his brother. You talk about the schizophrenia, and he did introduce Bowie to the kind of outre culture, if you like. Jazz here, William Burroughs there. That's an important point for you, is it?
Okay, so when my rule to myself was no dates, no biography, no facts. I broke that rule, and it pained me to no end. I was traumatized. I went through an existential crisis. I was like, as soon as I mention any individual, it invites the question, well, why not mention Iggy? Why not mention Lou? And I had to arrive at a point where I said to myself, as a cohesive work, this now fell apart. It's not perfect. It's imperfect. But art is imperfect. And the director who arrived at this film would have never done that. But it was basically through listening to Bowie for years and this idea that there is no virtuosity, that virtuosity is overrated, that there are no mistakes. There's only happy accidents. To not be precious. You know, one of the crazy things, I don't know if this is a known fact or not, but early on, I called up Tony, I called up the state, I called London, and I said, can I get all the alt takes of these songs? And everyone said the same thing. There are no alts. David would do one or two tracks, and that was it. And that, you know, that's, I think that that was something that I'm going to take with me for the rest of my career as an artist, of this, like, art's imperfect, life's imperfect, and it's okay. And I understand, I hope that there's enough of a covenant established with the audience through the beginning of the film for them to understand and recognize the orientation and the genre that I'm trying to construct, which is not a biographical documentary, but a film about Bowie in quotations.
Okay, well then finally, very briefly, you do use one piece. You use that Mad Mike Garson piano piece in the title track of Aladdin, saying, to what? Do something around, no, to actually kind of, to give us his mid-70s Lost in L.A. bit. Like, that's really throwing it all over the place. I thought that was brilliant. I loved all that.
You know, I was editing the film and I was writing, directing, producing. I was very, like, synchronized with the music. And so I particularly, in Aladdin saying, that is a random, excuse my language, there's a lot of kind of random stuff in there. It's a hodgepodge of stuff. And it's all like, it's every piano note is accentuated. Yeah. And that's actually one of my favorite scenes in the film, because I feel like that scene takes you on a real journey and really captures the disorientation and his kind of mindset at that period of his work without actually saying anything. Like, that is the perfect sort of that's a perfect amalgamation of the film. There's nothing that's really being said there, but it evokes a feeling and a sense of paranoia and a sense of definitely, you know, like, I've read people say, oh, well, you don't mention that he was on drugs. Did you watch the Aladdin Sane scene? He seems like he's kind of a little messed up in that area. So, you know, and again, it's like, do I have to say it? It seems to be pretty implicit. You know, I took the challenge that, like Mike Garson doing one take on Aladdin Sane, that this was freeform. This was jazz. This was meant to feel more jazz oriented than rock. You know, it's not four power chords. It's Garson's piano really is kind of the metaphor for the film.
It is. And I'm going to play that right now. Listen, Brett, thank you so much indeed. And congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Dave Fanning on 2FM.